with the passing of my mother, my trip to Washington, D.C., a pledge drive at the mothership, and the production of my new pledge incentive, Drug War Light, I ask the listeners of Cultural Baggage to please listen to this half-hour audition of our other offering, Century of Lies. Cultural Baggage will return next week with Brent Andrews, author of The Pot Plan, and now the premiere of Century of Lies. The failure of drug war is glaringly obvious to judges, cops, wardens, prosecutors, and millions more now calling for decriminalization, legalization, the end of prohibition. Let us investigate the Century of Lies.
My name is Dean Becker. This program is Century of Lies. It is our promise to you that we shall present the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth regarding the effects of drug prohibition. Each week, we contact members of the judiciary, the legislature, and law enforcement requesting their appearance on our programs to no avail. Therefore, we now offer $500 for a police captain or higher, assistant district attorney or higher, or to any working agent of the DEA, CIA, or Justice Department who will visit our show and clarify the need for eternal drug war. The drug warriors are certainly willing to take your money to justify this drug war. Let's see if they'll take mine. After our interview with Jack Cole, our guest for this premiere edition of Century of Lies, we'll get as close as we dare to the drug warrior mentality with a report from Winston Francis and the official government truth. I'm told we do now have our guest online. Jack, can you hear me?
Yes, I can. How are you doing,
Dean? I'm well, sir. Welcome to Century of Lies. Jack, for those who may not have heard you on our programs before, tell the folks a bit about yourself.
Well, I'm a retired detective lieutenant from the New Jersey State Police, 26 years there. For 14 of those years, I worked in Narcotic Bureau, mainly undercover, doing everything from street-level drug deals up to billion-dollar international heroin and cocaine traffic conspiracy rings.
Well, Jack, in those years, it was your job to basically to fool people, wasn't it?
Oh, yes.
Let's talk about that, setting people up for the big fall. How does that work?
Well, it's not the being an undercover person isn't the romantic thing that you would imagine from watching television or the movies. It's really a pretty despicable job. You see, my job was to be targeted against an individual, and as soon as I received the information on who that target was supposed to be, my job became do whatever is necessary to become that person's closest friend, their best confidant, so that I could betray them and send them to prison. And as soon as I finished with that person, I was targeted against another one. It was just over and over again, friendship, betrayal, prison.
It's, yes, despicable indeed, I must say. Now, considering you were just one cog in one wheel, that happens 1.6 million times a year. Is that right?
No, no, those aren't all undercover.
Well, okay, you're absolutely right, but thousands, if not hundreds of thousands.
Well, certainly, and certainly we are taking 1,600,000 people every year that we are arresting for nonviolent drug offenses every single year, and those lives, if they're not destroyed, they are certainly crippled. And we have a saying, a leap, you can get over an addiction, you will never get over a conviction. That's because a conviction will follow you every day for the rest of your life. It's on a computer. It doesn't matter if you move to another country. It's right there every time you go to get a job. It's over your head like this big, ugly cloud. And if you're a young person in our country and you want to, say, go back to school and better your lot in life, you've been caught with so much as a marijuana cigarette, you discover that you can no longer get a grant or loan from the government to go to school. We're pretty harsh with the people we arrest for drugs.
Well, yes, sir. It's all designed to supposedly teach a lesson, if you will, that they won't ever do it again, and this will learn them, I guess.
Yeah, that's true. That's what we're pretty good at punishment in this country.
Yes, sir. Now, LEAP, let's talk about the who makes up LEAP. Who are the members of your organization?
Well, LEAP is something that was created about 3 years ago. After I retired, I felt pretty bad about what I'd done. Over 1,000 folks went to jail as a direct result of my work out there. And, you know, you might even be able to live with some of that, some of this harm that you're doing if you were doing any good at all. But the fact of the matter is, after 35 years of fighting the war on drugs, drugs are cheaper, more potent, and far easier to get today than they were in 1970 when I started buying them undercover on the streets. So that's the very essence of a failed policy. And on top of that, as I say, I had destroyed a lot of lives. I felt very bad about that. So I went back to school, and I'm trying to get a PhD now in public policy to try to do something to change these laws. I sat down with four other police officers about 3 years ago, and we tried to figure out what would we really want to do if we had our way to do the correct thing that say the war on drugs is trying to do. And we decided that what we're really interested in is lowering the incidence of death, disease, crime, and addiction. And sadly, those are four categories that are each made so much worse by the fact that the war on drugs exists. So we knew we didn't want to do that, and we knew we didn't want to come up with some crazy sort of zero-tolerance program that would just do away with all drugs in the world, because that's a total impossibility. So what we thought we wanted to do in stopping drug use would be to stop people from becoming addicted to it, or try to help those who had become addicted to it get out of that addiction. And we created this organization. It's called LEAP, or Law Enforcement Against Prohibition. It's created to give voice to all the people in law enforcement like us that believe that the war is not only a dismal failure, but it's a terribly destructive policy. And our goal is to educate the public, the media, and the policymakers to the horrors that have been created in the war on drugs, and to all the unintended consequences that are occurring as a result of that war.
Well, Jack, with some 2,000 members and about, is it around 90 speakers in LEAP now?
That's you're right on both counts.
And
that's in a 3-year period. And we're not just cops now. We're police officers, judges, prosecutors, prison wardens. We even have former DEA agents who help make up that bureau of 90 speakers.
And even the working mayor of Vancouver, if I recall, right?
Oh, yeah. And the reason he's a speaker for us is before he was, that's Larry Campbell. Before he became mayor, he did 12 years in the Royal Canadian Mounted Police, 4 years undercover in their narcotic bureau. And then he actually, you know, between being a police officer and being the mayor, he worked for 3 years as the coroner of Vancouver. And during the time he was the coroner up there, he told me that they had the highest rate of overdose deaths of any city in North America, more than one a day. That's a lot, Dean. That's all these folks dying from drug overdose. And he decided that that just had to stop. So he ran for mayor. And people, you know, tell us that if you run for a public office and you run saying that you want to do something about drug reform, you'll never make it. But his is quite a different story. Because two of the planks in his platform were about drug reform. First, he said that we should legalize all marijuana. And of course, there's not a whole lot you could do about that as the mayor of the city, except maybe tell people higher up that this should happen, which he's doing. But the second plank was he said that they needed to create safe, supervised injection sites for intravenous hard drug users, sites where these people could come in and inject their drugs under medical supervision using clean needles so that there wouldn't be any overdoses, and to sort of to help stop AIDS and hepatitis from being spread. And not only was he elected for office of mayor, he was elected with the largest plurality that's ever existed in that office up there. Now, that's quite a story.
It is indeed. Now, it's my understanding that as this year progresses, we are going to hear more from LEAP, that you guys are you're making contact with the various police associations and finding a positive response there. Let's talk about that.
Well, we started that last year, Dean. We started going to police conventions, national and international ones. Before that, we'd done over 1,000 presentations, but they were to civic groups, professional organizations, religious and educational places, colleges and universities, etc. But last year, we started going to the law enforcement conventions. The reason we did that was, well, for one, we wanted to recruit some more folks like us. We went to 6 of those conventions, and we got some speaking gigs at a couple of them. We did I was on a panel discussion at one. But the biggest thing we did was we set up an educational display booth in their vendor section that was up for the entire time of each conference, 4 or 5 days at a time. And we'd bring in about 3 of our speakers and a couple of our supporters in there to staff that booth all day, every day. And we'd talk to as many people in law enforcement as we could at that booth, but we'd talk to them on a one-to-one basis. And that's very, very important that you talk to law enforcement on a one-to-one basis. I'd always tell our people, don't sit behind the table. Get out in front of that table, and if someone comes down the aisle, if they so much as look at our banner, you got them by the elbow and say, hey, have you heard about our organization? Well, they're decent people. They're, especially when they find out we're law enforcement, they'll talk to us. And what we did was we kept track after we talked to them, and after we told them our side of the story, we kept track of all the people we had talked to, and whether they agreed with us, disagreed, or were undecided. And, Dean, this was the most amazing thing. Only 6% of them, after they talked to us, wanted to continue the war on drugs. 14% were undecided, and an astounding 80% of those people agreed with us that we should end drug prohibition. Now, that's just an amazing figure to me. And the most amazing thing about it was it probably amounted to, I don't know, somewhere between 900 and 1,000 people that were agreeing with us. And I could probably count on both hands the number of those people who did agree with us that before we came along ever realized there was another human being in law enforcement that felt the way they do. They're so frightened of peer pressure, they're afraid to talk to each other about this.
I think that's indicative of a situation here in Texas regarding medical marijuana. And 75% of Texans agree that it's a necessary thing, but that same number also thinks the majority disagree with them. And in regards to the drug war, yesterday I got my hair cut, and I told the barber I was going to D.C. for a drug conference. He proceeded to tell me how we needed to have reform, all the various reasons, cops stealing evidence out of lockers, etc., etc. So the knowledge is out there. We just have to embolden one another to make this change.
It's true. It's absolutely true. And once they feel that they have the right to speak out about this stuff, they do it. They tell us about it. And people are joining us constantly. I picked up 4 new speakers this week, and you know, if we pick up four a week, we're going to be so huge in very before very long. Already using just only about 25 to 30 of our speakers at all, we have done, as I say, over, it's at 1,025 gigs as of this week.
Wow.
And imagine what that's going to be like when we have all 90 trained and out there and talking every week about this stuff. And of course, each one of them goes out and talks, and when they go out and do 5 or 10 talks, they get each one gets a new speaker or two, and they go out, and it's just like a snowball effect.
And these are the stuffed shirts of the community you're talking to, the Rotarians, the Lions, the JCs.
Yeah, those are the groups that we try to target. Certainly, we always try to target the civic groups, and we do that for some pretty good reasons, I think. First off, at LEAP, we don't believe in doing what some of the drug reform organizations do in having reform seminars or groups or forums or something. We seldom ever do that because we feel like you're preaching to the choir there. Before you ever open your mouth, almost everybody that came in the room is already on your side. We want to go out where they don't believe in what we're saying. And by just telling the truth, we know that we can convince the vast majority of these people that we're right in what we're claiming, and that our goals are the goals that everybody should be after.
Now, Jack, let's talk about the fiscal cost. The money squandered, if you will. You said drugs are cheaper and more available than ever before, but what are we investing into this drug war and versus what we get back?
Well, so far we've invested over $500 billion in 35 years, but that's just a piddling sum, really, compared to what we will invest in the future years, because it increases every year. It costs more and more money. For instance, when in 1970, the first year we started with the war on drugs, the federal government spent about $100 million on the war. Last year, the federal government alone spent $19.2 billion on that war. So it's increasing at an unbelievable rate, the amounts of money we're putting into this. When you figure it all out, what we're spending to interdict drugs at our borders and beyond, and then to chase around and arrest the people using that 90% of those drugs that comes right through that sieve at the border, do the investigations that are necessary to cause them to be arrested, and then the prosecute them all, and then the ones who are found guilty house in our prisons, many for the rest of our life because of these harsh laws we have. We figure that comes to about $69 billion a year today, and it's going to increase next year and every year afterwards.
Well, sir, we export this policy around the world. Even I read in this morning's New York Times that despite, I think it was 90 aircraft down there spraying poisons on the coca plants, that they destroyed a record number of acreage, and yet the harvest came out more than the year before.
Well, that's because it has what's known as the balloon effect. You know, it's just like trying to get rid of a half-inflated balloon by pushing it out of the way. And, of course, when you push in one area, one country, it just expands in the countries right around it. So when we made any headway at all, excuse me, for instance, in Colombia, all that was just more than made up for in the crops that were grown in Ecuador and Peru, and then we jump over to those countries, and it goes back to Colombia. This stuff is going to exist forever unless we take the profit motive out of it.
And
you can only do that by legalizing drugs.
Yes, sir. And that comparison you're drawing there, the balloon effect, it pretty much holds true for the street level dealers, that it's when you make an arrest, it's a job opportunity for another disadvantage.
Oh, absolutely. Sure. And if we go in and we target a community, the drug dealers just move to the next community. And then as soon as we go out there, they move back in, they flow back into the community that we had targeted before. It's an unending thing. It's been going on for 35 years. The only thing that happens, as I said, is everything gets worse. Let me explain what I mean by everything gets worse. We were talking about the drugs themselves, the supply of drugs, for instance. You know, one of the things we talk about, very few people understand that when we started the war on drugs, we really didn't have much of a problem with drugs in the United States. And what little problem we had was mainly with soft drugs. Drugs like marijuana, hashish, there was some LSD, psilocybin, mushroom type things around. But hard drugs such as heroin, cocaine, and methamphetamine were almost unheard of back in 1970. Certainly unheard of compared to what they are today. And back then, a decent seizure for a local police officer or state cop executing a search warrant on a house might be 1 ounce of cocaine or 1/4 of an ounce of heroin. Now look what we're seizing today. I mean, local and state cops regularly make seizures of 100 kilos of either heroin or cocaine. I've read in the paper about seizures of as much as 10 tons, single seizure of 10 tons of heroin, 20 tons of cocaine in a single seizure, and nothing changes on the street except drugs get cheaper, more potent, and easier to get.
And these overdose deaths often occur because the marketplace doesn't have any control. They might be getting 20% heroin for a month, and then suddenly a batch comes through, and there's no regulatory system, and it's 80%. And that next thing you know, you've got an overdose death.
That's exactly what happens. People don't die on the street because they shoot more and more dope in order to some crazy attempt to get higher and higher. They die because they get what's known in the trade as a hot shot, which is exactly what you explained. And the problem is, when they buy that little container of white or brown powder, there is no way in the world to tell how much of that is the real drug and how much of that is the cutting agent. If they think it's 10% drug and 90% cutting agent, and it turns out to be the opposite, they're dead. It's just like the stories we used to hear about during alcohol prohibition. We've been here before, you know. During alcohol prohibition, we had bathtub gin, unregulated, uncontrolled production of what was supposed to be alcohol products. And people would drink it, they would go blind, they'd drink it, and they'd die. It had nothing to do with the alcohol itself, the pharmacology. It had to do totally with prohibition and the fact that there was no control or regulation over how it was produced. Same thing's happening today.
Well, Jack, we're just about out of time. I want to remind folks we've been talking with Jack Cole, the Director of Law Enforcement Against Prohibition. If you'd like to learn more about them, visit their website at leap.cc. Jack, any closing comment?
Just that I really wish that all of the people out there who are hearing this would join us at LEAP. You don't have to be law enforcement to join as a friend of LEAP. It doesn't cost any money. And the more people that join us, the more we'll get this word out, and the sooner this will end. And it will end. It's got to end. Because going the other way, you know, already over 87 million people in this country have used an illegal drug. And that's 87 million above the age of 12. That's pretty much all of us above the age of 12.
Well, Jack,
not myself. I don't happen to use illegal drugs. I use a much worse drug. I use Jack Daniels, which probably alcohol is the second worst drug you can get into. But this will end, but we got to get everyone behind it.
Jack Cole, thank you very much.
When Saul
turns to Paul. Today's Saul was a corrections officer watching over hundreds of drug users in prison. And today's Paul is Canada's Alison Merton.
Leap had seen some of the things that I had been out in the media doing, and they had asked me, because I was a retired corrections officer, if I would join them. We are constantly all over the world talking about legalizing drugs in all sorts and all forms, because we don't want our children to have them anymore. We don't want the black market to be running it anymore. As a sick person, I personally don't want to be shopping in the black market. I think that's absolutely unacceptable in this day and age.
It's time to play Name That Jurisdiction by Its Drug Law. This is a sad story of a current situation about an Australian supermodel surfer found with 4 kilograms of marijuana in her board bag. The young woman in question, Chappelle Corby, is set to be executed by a firing squad next month for this relatively minor amount of marijuana. A man has signed a statement naming 3 baggage handlers he says planted the drugs in Corby's unlocked bag. The chief lawyer said the 3 baggage handlers had since been jailed in Australia. Miss Corby is due to have a verdict in mid-May. If found guilty of drug trafficking, she'll face the firing squad a short time after. This jurisdiction is just one of many puppets dancing to the U.S.-mandated Eternal War of Drug Prohibition song. Miss Corby is being held in Bali.
Today on the official government truth, a man pleads guilty by reason of insanity after smoking marijuana and shooting his girlfriend's face off. What the government has to say about the successes of the drug war, and a word from Dr. Dana Hansen, president of the Canadian Medical Association. Waco, Texas. It's been nearly 2 years since the horrible night when Carolyn Thomas found herself in a pool of blood, horribly disfigured at the hands of her boyfriend of 10 years, Terrence Kelly. Kelly, 32, does not dispute that he shot Thomas, but is pleaded not guilty by reason of insanity. According to authorities, Kelly was smoking marijuana before the shootings. According to Speaking Out Against Drug Legalization, a publication released by the Department of Justice, overall drug use in America is down by more than a third since the late 1970s. The most recent numbers indicate up to 9.5 million fewer using illegal narcotics in America. In fact, the Department of Justice claims that less than 5% of Americans now use illegal drugs of any kind. As illicit drug use dwindles away here in America, we as Americans have the federal government and the drug war to thank for that. And now, Dr. Dana Hansen, president of the Canadian Medical Association.
From the point of view of the CMA, is marijuana addictive?
Yes, there is no doubt whatsoever on scientifically basis.
You know the people who say that the medical use of marijuana can be a lifesaver. Is there any conclusive study that helps guide people as to whether or not this is real or a fantasy?
Exactly as you have said, there is not conclusive, scientifically based evidence of that.
For the Drug Truth Network, this has been Winston Francis with the official Government Truth.
Okay, no time, but I'll just say this. Winston is full of it. I'll get back to him next week. In closing, there is no justice, no logic, no scientific fact, no religious underpinnings, no moral clarity, no reason whatsoever for this drug war to continue another second. The drug lords run both sides of this equation. We've been duped. Please become part of the solution. Dare to speak the truth. Prohibito istoc ivalesco.
For the Drug Truth Network, this is Dean Becker asking you to examine our policy of drug prohibition, the century of lies. The show produced at the Pacifica Studios of KPFT, Houston.